Now it's time for the Southern Cross.
Southern Cross is back this week with Lachlan and I in studio. And right here today is Pacific Media Watch contributing editor, Michael Andrew. Thank you for being back.
No worries. Thank you.
Cool. So let's begin. Obviously, there's a lot going on in the Pacific right now, particularly with all the various elections. So let's begin with the Australian election. Can you tell us a little bit about Scott Morrison's win?
Yeah, absolutely. So they're calling it a miracle win because it's very much against the polls or what the polls seem to show in the build-up to the election. So his Liberal campaign beat the Labor opposition, and it's interesting because whereas Labor campaigned on these really big policy changes, such as tax reform and changes with immigration and refugees, and in particular climate change, the Liberal Party, the winners, didn't actually campaign on any of that. Well, they didn't really have a strong mandate, so they more campaigned on the personality of ScoMo.
Lack thereof.
I think he's got this image as the kind of down to earth Aussie bloke, the kind of bloke next door. You know, it's very similar, I guess, to what John Key could pull off.
Yeah, I was going to say that it's sort of like, you know, but come John around Key, and have a barbecue with Scott.
But he was kind of furthest from the typical Kiwi, being a multimillionaire and all. So so they won on that, it appears, but obviously it's still being analysed, and the results of it and what it might mean are still going to be analysed. But it doesn't look like it's going to bode well for the Pacific, because there's not a strong policy on climate change. It's much more of the same, and especially with regard to the detention centres, that they needed some change on that. They needed some leadership, and I don't know if that's going to happen, because that's not been brought up in the Liberal Party's agenda all that much. So yeah, it's not really good for the Pacific.
But
we'll wait and see what happens. But yeah, it seems like the Labor Party overestimated the electorate's appetite for change. It seemed like people wanted change, but it appears that the electorate has reverted back to wanting things to stay as they are, or maybe closing down a bit rather than opening up and addressing some of these big issues. So,
And that's just incredibly disappointing. I mean, we all know how important it is that, particularly climate change, and having policies on climate change is for the Pacific. And if, you know, Australia isn't on board with that very big nation, and if they've got nothing going for that, then that's terribly problematic.
Absolutely. I mean, they're a leader in that region. They should be a leader, and they should be, leading the other Pacific and contributing, especially in terms of policy. So it is pretty disappointing.
So let's turn to Papua New Guinea and the looming vote of no confidence there. Can you tell us a little bit about sort of what's going
happening
on?
Yeah, so this is quite a topsy-turvy affair.
Yes.
But so there was a big defection. We covered this in the last shows, but there was a big defection from MPs. So dozens of MPs left the cabinet and formed an opposition, and it almost equaled the majority. Well, it was almost the majority. So they lodged a vote of no confidence in Parliament. But Peter O'Neill, who's very, very clever and very much a wily politician, managed to delay Parliament or have it adjourned for 3 weeks. So they can't actually
do anything.
The motion can't be passed until Parliament adjourns, and that will be the end of May, the 26th of May, I believe. So that's a wait and see kind of thing. But there have just been some stories that have come out about the kind of deals that the previous government, well, that the government under Peter O'Neill have done, borrowing money from overseas banks and investing it very poorly. And what's happened is the leader of the opposition was the ex-finance minister under him, and he approved those loans. So he's implicated in it as well. But he's like the guy who's poised to replace Peter O'Neill is Merape.
So it's just bad.
Yeah, so he's like,
either way,
he was supposed to be the kind of golden replacement, and now it's implicated that he's been
very involved,
very involved in
some
in
of the things that are very
deals.
Wrong. Yeah.
Yeah, so now it's like, okay,
do
what?
You think there's any possibility that some wild card politician could come out of this? And
maybe, yeah, there's like so many contenders.
I'm here to save the day.
I think he had the, as the most senior minister there, he was poised for the as the replacement, but there's probably a whole lot of more suitable candidates that don't have so many indiscretions, or any indiscretions perhaps. So we'll see what happens on that one.
Absolutely. It just feels like it just keeps going on and on.
Who knew Papua New Guinea could have such exciting politics?
Crazy politics. So now we'll turn to New Caledonia. What's happening there? There's a new party shaking up the political landscape.
So I don't know how much your listeners know about New Caledonia, but they had an independence referendum last year.
Yes.
And so there'll be another one next year. So that's very much the theme of the politics at the moment, is it anti or pro independence? And what's happened is the election have destabilized one of the leading parties, which was Caledonia Together, New Caledonia Together. So they've lost a bunch of their seats, and a new party, a more far-right party, has come into the picture, and they've gained a lot of seats. So they're backed by this very staunch anti-independence woman, Sonia Bucky, I think her name is pronounced in French. So they're pretty much the biggest party now, but a new party has come in, which is kind of a wild card, and it's a Polynesian party. I think David talked about this, consisting of the Wallace and Fortuna population, which are Polynesian. So they pretty much indicated that they are keen to stay with France, the small population, but they have three seats that might determine the majority in the House. So it depends on whether they're pro or anti. And that will shape how it runs into the next referendum next year. So if they're pro-independence, they'll form the majority with the pro-independence bloc, and that'll give more power to them, and they'll be able to influence the electorate that way. So it will have implications for the independence referendum.
So it really is, like, it is very likely that it will be down to those three seats.
Well, it's 26 pro-independence and 28 anti-independence seats right now. So there's a slim majority, and if those three seats go pro-independence, then they've got a majority, and that changes the shape of things for the next next referendum.
Absolutely. My goodness.
Yeah. So
it's all,
that is a controversial issue in France, in New Caledonia, because it's like, do we stay with France or do we be independent? It's all about sovereignty and self-determination, which are really big
important
things.
Issues. So, yeah. We'll see how that goes. We're turning to talk a little bit about the University of the South Pacific. There have been administration abuse allegations.
Yeah, not abuse in the like, in what you might think, but more just mismanagement of finances and money. Yeah. So the university's council is calling for an independent inquiry or investigation into the conduct of the ex-pro vice chancellor, who has allegedly misspent money and overpaid staff and filled out and proceeded with contracts without approval and that kind of thing. So as a partner of Pacific Media Centre, University of South Pacific is very important, and as a stalwart of New Zealand, Fijian journalism and Pacific journalism. So it is important that they're clean and they're not, these allegations.
Wrongly. Yeah.
So hopefully this investigation will clear all that up.
And then sort of finally, the Secretary General spoke at AUT South in Manukau last week and will be visiting Pacific countries to assess the effects of climate change. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
Sure. So he visited last Monday, and I went to see him talk, and he was very much said all the right things. It was great.
Good. Love that.
So he's a very, very effective and powerful politician, and diplomat, and he seemed to very, very much inspire the crowd. And he did display a lot of passion about exacting change in the Pacific and in the world with regard to climate change. And he is currently, he was in Fiji, and he's visiting Tuvalu just to be on the ground and see what the effects of climate change are. So he's been in Fiji and he's praised them on how they've addressed climate change with their domestic policy.
Mm.
I think at the talk, you know, he almost passed off. He said, "We need the younger generations to do more, and you know, I'm looking to you for leadership." So, and a lot of people were like, "Well, what are you going to do?" You know, you're like, but he was very evasive and very, as rightly, you know, he's trained to be. He's not going to basically admit that he can't do anything,
that
he's powerless. But, I don't know if he is powerless. But anyway, there were a few kind of like head scratching. But otherwise, a very, very inspiring talk. And, it's good to have a diplomat of that caliber down here and in the Pacific actually paying attention, because that's what that region needs desperately.
Completely. And I think it is interesting that sort of passing off onto the youth. I feel like that's sort of a common theme, that it's always like, young people, they're going to come forward and change the world. And that's amazing, but and that's great that people have faith in youth like that. But, you know, we've got to enact change now, no matter what age you are or whatever you're doing. It's sort of, I feel like it's, you know, particularly with issues like climate change, we can't just be waiting for, you know, people to get out of university and get into a job which will help them be able to do something. Everybody's got to start making a move.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, wherever you are, whatever you're doing.
It was obviously quite a staged affair. I mean, you'd expect as much.
Absolutely.
So he didn't take any questions from the media.
Oh, really?
But he, you know, because we would have plied him on, where's Papua? What are you doing? What are you doing about human rights abuses?
Yeah.
But he did take questions from students, like from, there was Papatoetoe High School students and students from AUT South. And one of them had a really good question. He said, you can't really wait for us to come of age and then address climate change.
Yeah.
What are you going to do right now? And he had a really tactful political answer. He was like, I'm not waiting for you to come into power. I'm waiting for you to make as much noise as possible now and mobilise. And so very good words.
Yeah, good words. But you're like, what are we going to see?
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. So thank you so much, Michael. That's great. So everybody listening out there, you can read all about the Pacific Media Centre and their updates on All Pacific News all the time at asiapacificreport.nz. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That was the Southern Cross.